Advanced Studio Classroom is on the air. Let's continue our tour through the City of Art. Hello, everyone. Welcome to today's advanced program. I'm Linda, your host. We are continuing to talk about our travel article. Today is June 6th. It's a continuation of Exploring the City of Art, an art critic's guide to the museums of Paris. So yesterday, we started our tour of Paris, and we visited a couple of museums. Today, we will visit a couple more. And back with me is Rhonda to continue the tour. Hi, Rhonda.
Hello, Linda. Let's go back to Paris, shall we?
Yes. I very much enjoyed our tour so far. We looked at the Louvre and also the Orsay Museum. And Paris is just full of art. Probably everywhere you go, you can see art. And it's just a beautiful city. It's always been a mecca for artists to visit and to feel free to explore and to challenge themselves. And we learned this in the latter part of the article yesterday of the program when we were talking about this Moulin Rouge era, this Belle Époque era in the 19th century, where artists were, there was a lot of advancement going on, particularly in the arts, and these artists were creating artwork that was challenging, right? That went against the grain, and a lot of it was considered controversial for different reasons. But in these museums, you can also see a lot of classic works that are praised and are very valued. And in your magazine, on the first page, we have some pictures of the Louvre. And one of the pictures is the statue, the sculpture of Nike of Samothrace, the Winged Victory. It's a marble statue from antiquity. We learned this word yesterday, from ancient times. It is a figure, looks like a mythological figure, because she has wings and she doesn't have a head. Her head had broken off at some point, but it is beautiful, headless.
Well, and you gave the correct pronunciation. We say Nike, right? And that's, of course, a shoe brand now with that swish on the side. So you mentioned the wings. Nike, the goddess of victory, right?
And yeah, she has wings. She flies. She's known as Winged Victory. But yes, Nike of Samothrace. And that is in the Louvre. You see it in the picture. She has her own
niche space. Is that the right word? Yeah. How tall is she?
I don't know exactly.
Well, I
how
guess
tall.
If that picture does
it. Pretty tall. Also, she's placed above, like on a
up on a pedestal. So,
yes.
Yeah. Sometimes we say we put a person up on a pedestal if we admire them very much.
Yes, but actually, the shape of the pedestal that she's on looks like a ship, and that's probably what she might have been on. Put at the front of a ship to protect that ship or to make it go faster, right? Because she was the goddess of victory. And then we also have pictures of the Louvre, the exterior and the interior. So the main entrance is this glass pyramid. And we know pyramids from the Egyptian times. This is a modern day pyramid.
It's really an interesting choice. I wonder if when that glass pyramid was erected,
it was very controversial.
It was controversial, yes. Because
yes.
You've got this, we read yesterday, the Louvre was built in the 13th century. I know it underwent some damage, but I think it's very interesting, the combination of modern era and in antiquity.
Yes. It is this very much this combination because it's made out of glass, right, which is more modern medium. And it kind of contradicts the overall style of the Louvre. But we've just come to love it now because it's so much part of the museum. Yes, it was very controversial when it came, but it was designed by I.M. Pei, famous architect. Yeah, it just represents the Louvre.
Right. And I think art and controversy often go together.
Yes.
We had that word controversial yesterday for a depiction of a woman in one of the museums. So I think often that language goes together. The art is controversial, and that will always be
yes.
true in human endeavors
yes.
Because art is an expression of either the artist's inner vision or mm-hmm. can be something that is representing something in the culture.
Yes, and art is always changing. So something that seemed controversial at that time, now it's seen as the classic piece of that period. So let us hear the reading of our first museum now.
The Quai Branly Museum. Before you spend hours waiting to get to the top of the Eiffel Tower, make a stop at Quai Branly, which features indigenous and non-Western art. It's located in one of the most scenic old parts of Paris, filled with winding cobblestone streets and cafes where employees reluctantly serve you, the tourist, one more buttery soft croissant. You can try to order in French, but be prepared to get a snarky response in English. This is the only museum I found in Paris that speaks so directly and honestly about the devastating impact of colonialism on indigenous culture and art. Entire collections explore the Aztec society before and after Spanish colonialization, including paintings of the caste systems put in place by Europeans. Another section features art from French Caribbean colonies such as Haiti, which gained independence from France in 1804, masks from African countries, objects from Inuit tribes, window frames and ceramic artifacts from Iran, and masks from Sri Lanka used in exorcisms are some of the many objects to explore.
Okay, so we continue down the river, and this is very close to the Eiffel Tower, right? The symbol of Paris. We are at the Quai Branly Museum, and we got a little bit of French culture thrown in there, right?
Yes, more than French culture. This has to do with controversies, not controversy about the art, but controversy about the history and art that reminds us of a controversial history.
Yes.
This museum opened
the museum.
Yes.
But before we get into the museum, our author is just talking about this being the most scenic part of Paris, where the museum is, has cobblestone streets and cafes where French employees reluctantly serve you, right?
Yeah, we have to stop and talk about why the author chose that word reluctantly. Mm. It's fun. Shouldn't go together that a waiter or a waitress is reluctant, hesitant to serve you.
Yeah, but doesn't really want to, but is forced to serve you, right? So this is representative of the French attitude, their famous French attitude.
Well, famous or infamous, you hear that the French don't want you to try to speak French to them if your French isn't very good. That's
right.
That stereotype.
Well, they'll look down on you if you don't speak French or if you speak French because you're not going to speak it perfectly, right? So
snarky. Well, snarky
yes.
means annoyed or saying rude things in an annoyed or sarcastic way. We might say, hey, don't be so snarky mm-hmm. to our teenage son or something.
Teenagers are often snarky, right? Like
yeah.
they're rude. They say these things that are not that polite, right? So French are known for this, but they're also known for their food. This is also mm-hmm. the city of food, right? Food lovers would flock there.
And I noticed, again, the writer says one more buttery croissant. It doesn't mm-hmm. say just a buttery croissant. It says one more. In other words, they're so used to serving croissants to people
yes.
that's part of the fun of the sentence. The employee, it's almost like they're, oh, no, another tourist who wants one more croissant.
Because you can never have too many croissants.
Mm.
It's like true. They're so good.
So good.
Buttery. Like we've had an article on butter earlier this year in January.
Buttery.
2026. We had an article on butter and just how, like you need a lot of butter to make a really good croissant.
But oh, stop talking about it. I want to
really
stop
enjoy.
And have one right now.
Yes, going to Paris and just trying all of the amazing food and desserts. Right. So that's before we get into the museum, right? Mm-hmm. And this is the only museum that the author found in Paris that speaks so directly and honestly about the devastating impact of colonialism on Indigenous culture and art. And how would you define colonialism, Rhonda?
Sure. Well, colonialism is the practice or policy of a powerful nation controlling another country, sort of inviting themselves in. Colonialism is history's biggest problem, historical happening, is powerful nations controlling other nations, especially by establishing settlements and taking advantage of resources. It's a sad history of the world. And it says here, the devastating impact, the super harmful effects of colonialism on the native, indigenous culture.
Yes, and we
and
see
art.
Evidence of that throughout history that took place in the Americas, North America, South America. It's taken place in Asia of more powerful countries going to other countries and taking over the resources.
And taking their art, sure. Why do you see Egyptian art in Europe? Well, something happened where someone took an item or artifact from that country.
So that would explain why a lot of a country's art ends up in a different country.
Sure. And then an argument will take place. Well, it's a good thing that one country has it because that other place
was
war torn. Mm-hmm. So the controversies go on and on. As we say, they rage on and on. But this museum opened just, about 20 years ago. And this would be very different from the other museums along that river. So I find this very interesting. It includes entire collections that explore not just the French had colonies, but Aztec society before and after Spanish colonization. So that would be, I believe, Mexico, Guatemala, Central America, the Aztec cultures.
Yeah, South America. And the Spanish had colonized Central America, South America, and parts of even Florida. There was at one point a colony of Spain. That's where they get its name, Florida, the flower.
Sure. And the Aztec society specifically would be, I don't know if this museum just has collections from the ancient Aztecs, who also built pyramids, didn't they? Am I king of the right culture?
Similar structures, yes. And you had said colonization, which here it is colonialization. And there is a it's basically the same idea, but colonization, we saw the word colonialism, right? So colonization is when a country goes and colonizes a land. Colonialization also, same idea, but when colonialization takes place, they impose their rules and regulations and customs, language on that colonized area, that area that they've taken control of.
I'm glad you noticed my misreading. Colonization, I'm going to have to look up the difference. Colonization, so isn't necessarily something oppressive, I guess?
No, it still can be oppressive. because it is seizing resources and controlling that particular area or settlement. But colonialization is making that land
someone else's, yours. I'm thinking
of like that country imposing like their customs, their language, their religion on that particular area.
I'm thinking colonization is something that's said about Elon Musk wanting to
colonize Mars.
Mars.
Yeah.
That would be colonization.
It wouldn't be.
So there's no people there already.
Right. to convert. Yeah.
As we say in English, it's a mouthful. Mm-hmm. Colonialization is a mouthful to say.
Yes. And so an example of colonialization is implementing a caste system. And we see that specifically like in colonies. Like there was a system in place where each particular group of people, maybe it was determined by race or religion or language, they were put into positions in society.
And that limited them.
Yes. And if it was very restrictive, then they couldn't get out of that particular position or that particular caste. They were stuck in that caste or that particular level of society. So it was very restrictive. And this was all done for control, right? So that they can control the population. So another section of the museum features art from French Caribbean colonies. That includes Haiti. Haiti is actually very close to Jamaica, which is where I'm from in the Caribbean Sea. But Jamaica was colonized first by Spain and then became a British colony. But Haiti was a French colony, and so that is why they speak French and also a dialect of French. So it gained independence from France in 1804, but we can still see the damaging effects that French colonization had on Haiti. And in a lot of these colonies, you can still see evidence of that. But in this museum, you can see the artifacts and you can get an explanation of exactly how devastating the impact of colonialism had on these communities.
It's interesting, this whole section, you know, it goes from enjoying your buttery croissant on the street, kind of a humorous touch there, mm-hmm. to this very serious world history experience that you would have in this museum. It goes on to say masks from African mm-hmm. countries, objects from Inuit tribes, and she mentions window frames and ceramic artifacts from Iran, and then masks from Sri Lanka mm-hmm. used in exorcisms. Some of the many objects. Exorcisms is that a spiritual or a religious ritual where there's an evil spirit, a demon in someone, and there's an attempt to cast out the demon.
Right, to expel this evil mm-hmm. spirit. It can be from a location or from within someone's body. Right. So a lot of these artifacts or objects are used in ceremonies or rituals, so they might have a ritualistic aspect to them. But we can see we have artifacts from so many different parts of the world, from Africa, from the Caribbean, from South America.
Yeah, so sometimes art isn't just to make something look more beautiful, mm-hmm. right? This museum would not be about objects of beauty necessarily. Some of it would be, obviously, but some of it showing the dark sides of history and culture.
It has much more like cultural significance, like it was part of their daily life. So that would be a very educational experience, because we often don't hear about the effects or the devastating effects of colonialism in our history books, because a lot of it's been covered up or whitewashed. So it is very good that we can see this in this particular museum, the Quai Branly. But let us continue our journey, and we will go to a different part of Paris. We're going to the 18th arrondissement in Paris, where we will go to the Dalí Museum. Let's listen to that reading now.
Dalí, Paris. The largest private collection of art by the Spanish surrealist master Salvador Dalí lives in the heart of the Montmartre district. Journey to Montmartre, made famous by Toulouse-Lautrec's chronicling of its nightlife. This museum is off another heavy tourist area filled with artists from all over the world, practicing plein air painting and selling their goods directly to you. Some even do caricatures. Dalí was famously obsessed with time, and at this museum there are various melting clocks throughout the galleries, hanging from rods or hangers or draped over a sculpture of a tree. Don't miss Dalí's tarot watercolors, a giant thumb sculpture, and a sculpture of Venus with drawers installed in her body. All the works feed back into the artist's fascination with the subconscious.
So we go to this artistic district of Montmartre, and we are at the Dali Pali, the Dali Museum. It is the largest private collection of art by the Spanish surrealist master Salvador Dali. And he was the iconic artist to represent this particular art movement of surrealism. And how would you describe surrealism? Or maybe you can tell us what surreal means.
Sure. Surreal, we see real in there, but sur means kind of above or beyond real. Mm-hmm. So it's unusual, impossible things are depicted. Sometimes we say in English, oh, that was such a surreal experience that I just had. Something happened to me, but it felt like it was very unreal.
Yeah, it's like unbelievable or dreamlike.
Dreamlike, yes.
And that is like a very integral part of surrealism. A lot of it is very dreamlike or based on dreams or the subconscious.
Yes.
And this movement was very heavily influenced by the theories and the studies of Sigmund Freud, who talked about our unconscious and the power of dreams or the power of the unconscious and dreams. He read into like the meaning of dreams. And so you see this theme of dreams in the work of Dali and other surrealist artists. And so let's go on this journey to Montmartre, made famous by Toulouse-Lautrec's chronicling of its nightlife. And yesterday we heard about Toulouse-Lautrec. We didn't have a chance to get too much into him, but do you know anything about him, Rana?
Well, I'm familiar with a painting of his where the woman's face is green. Mm-hmm. Is that the painting by Toulouse-Lautrec?
He painted a lot, well, of the nightlife, like, and we learned that the cancan was famous then. So he would paint cancan dancers and also bars within the Parisian nightlife. But he was controversial in himself because he was mostly known for printmaking. He made lithographs. So these prints. And he depicted Parisian nightlife as less idealistic. So he was touching on the seedy side, like the darker side of the Parisian nightlife. And this included what went on in the bars and in the cabarets. And here, this particular district is where the famous Moulin Rouge was located, which we talked about yesterday at the end of yesterday's program. And so that's a reason why this district is well known, also for all of the artists that live there. So the Dali Museum is off another heavy tourist area filled with artists from all over the world practicing plein air painting.
I like that phrase, plein air. Does it mean maybe full air? I don't know what the French word plein literally means, but it's the idea of painting outdoors in natural light. Mm-hmm. My mother used to like to take her paints outdoors and paint, so a plein air artist. So it sounds like it would be a wonderful place to go, this tourist area where there are artists from all over the world actually painting outdoors and selling their goods directly to you. Some will even do a caricature. That's a fun thing to do as a tourist, have someone do a funny drawing of you to deliberately
make you look
funny. Yeah,
it's like a cartoon.
And they're on the street.
Yeah, mm-hmm. You'll find street artists in other cities as well doing this. They can quickly do a caricature of you and sell it to you. So you can be sold directly, like these paintings, either they do of you or of the landscape or of something. So it's a very artsy area. And Dali in particular was famously obsessed with time. And that is the image that you see in a lot of his artwork, a melting clock. It's like so he explores this idea of time, like what does it really mean? And you see various versions of his melting clock throughout the galleries. There it could be hanging from rods or hangers or draped over a sculpture of a tree. And that is the particular depiction that we see in our magazine, the artwork Nobility of Time by Dali in the museum. And there are also other versions of this of this image, this nobility of time. There's a famous one in Spain that's outdoor at an intersection, but this one is right in the museum, and it's made of bronze. So it has this melting clock over this tree, like kind of running down this tree. And there are also, of course, many other works of art by Dali. What shouldn't you miss, Rhonda?
Well, his watercolors. The next one catches my eye, a giant thumb sculpture. I looked that up. It's not particularly attractive, but there's a human thumb that he sculptured. Mm-hmm. And then a sculpture of Venus with drawers installed in her body. We were talking earlier about the idealistic depiction of Venus in classical art. But Dali has done something different with this famous goddess of love.
Right. He's depicting her, as something functional.
Yeah.
Like, here, you can use her as a dresser.
Yes. I guess it's better she's in a museum than in somebody's home, right?
Right. So all these works feed back into the artist's fascination with the subconscious, which we touched on earlier.
Surrealism.
Mm-hmm. Like this obsession with, dreams and what goes on in our subconscious and, again, influence of Sigmund Freud. Well, we hope you enjoyed this journey, this tour through the museums or some of the museums of Paris. We definitely have, and we hope you will come back for our next program. But for now, I'm Linda.
I'm Rhonda.
Saying goodbye.
Goodbye.